Survivor's Log, Day 1, Part 1. There was turbulence on the flight. A woman told me that her husband always reminds her that planes want to be in the air. I said he was a smart man. And that's when the plane took a sharp turn in descent. The last thing I remember was securing my oxygen mask as we approached the ocean and the plane broke apart. I woke up later in a bamboo grove. I saw a golden retriever run by and I ran out of the grove to a pristine beach. It's been 2 days since Carson Wentz tore his ACL. Hell is empty, and all the devils are here. You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation at NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm moving forward, man. Yeah. This day was harder than yesterday, to be honest, because, you know, we're here, we're recording on a Monday. I woke up this morning and for the first like 5 seconds of consciousness, did not remember what happened. Kind of dawned on me again. And then I had that moment of maybe it was all a dream. And then it turned out it wasn't. And
I had that moment too.
Yeah, no. And then obviously kind of just sitting around waiting for the Doug Peterson presser, waiting for the news, kind of knowing that there was no hope, but still pretending that there was hope. And then, you know, you hear that Carson's out for the season. And then fortunately, like, I don't know, I've always been a very, okay, what's next sort of a guy. So it was immediately, you know, all right, when is he going to be back? Is it 2018? Like, it's 9 months till the beginning of the 2018 season. It's very much in question as to whether or not Carson will be back by then. Obviously, ACL recoveries have been shortening and shortening as medical technology has advanced and advanced, but still 9 months that's a pretty quick turnaround. Obviously, Carson young, healthy, no history of injury in the knee. As of right now, what we know is that it's a clean ACL tear. There's no other ligament damage around it of which to speak. Obviously, Carson has not yet gone under the knife, so we have to make sure we go through a surgery without complication before we start talking about the recovery timetable. Carson should be a warrior. He should be a guy who's excellent at recovery and at rehab just because of his nature, so you know, you gotta look towards that. And then, you know, the immediate question then becomes, what can the Eagles do with Nick Foles moving forward? That's going to be a big topic for us, obviously, in this podcast. I did want to say, I kind of just put it out there, just curious as to what folks would say. I asked the question, you know, who's currently your NFC favorite to make it to the Super Bowl, right? I kind of put the poll out there. I included Philadelphia, New Orleans, Los Angeles, and Minnesota. I kind of wanted to give a spot to like Atlanta, Seattle, Carolina, and Green Bay, of course. I wasn't able to. Right now, Philadelphia is handily winning at 54%.
Wow.
Yeah, and then New Orleans at 25, Minnesota at 16, Los Angeles at 5. So still a lot of faith. Obviously, a lot of Eagle people follow me. So, you know, I wasn't the best account from which to put it out. But, you know, there's clearly still a demographic that thinks Philadelphia can do the thing. Not all hope is lost, but it's definitely been a tough day for sure.
Yeah, and that was actually the phrasing I was just about to use. And I want to make this clear from the outset of this show. Not all hope is lost for this team. And that has been the message the Eagles players have been trumpeting since the injury happened. And it showed in the way that they rallied in Sunday's win. This is not going from Deshaun Watson to Tom Savage. This is not going from Aaron Rodgers to Brett Hundley. This is not going from Josh McCown to Petty or Hack. It's not Derek Carr to Connor Cook or Matt McGloin, obviously.
Right.
You know, we know about Matt McGloin here in Philly. If Nick Foles plays up to the level that he has played in the past, and yes, I know his 27 touchdown, 2 interception season seems like a distant memory, but if he can harness 80 to 90% of that magic and be capable, competent, and protect the football, and the other units play up to their potential, and they use this as an opportunity to come together even tighter than they have been, really, then maybe we have something. Foles is a lifetime 20-16 as a starter, 15-9 as an Eagle. He's a 60% lifetime passer, 56 touchdowns as opposed to 27 interceptions. Again, I know this team is Carson Wentz, but there's a reason Nick Foles is here. There's a reason he's getting paid what he's getting paid. Stranger things have happened. Is the game plan going to change? Of course. Foles is not a threat with his feet, at least not the one that Wentz is, that's for sure. Yeah, he isn't quick on the trigger with his mental processing on the RPO concepts that we've relied so heavily upon. It's going to be very interesting to see how our play design and play calling morphs over the next few weeks as we push towards the playoffs. And life without Carson and that push towards the playoffs starts next Sunday against the New York Giants. As fans, I understand that this is an incredibly confusing, scary situation. Fretting about what could have been isn't going to change anything. Mm-hmm. This is our reality now, and there's going to be a cloud of uncertainty for us for a long time to come. Best get comfortable, focus on the task at hand, and that's what we're going to try to do here on this show moving forward. Still, our thoughts are with Carson, of course. That's our QB1, no doubt. That said, we're on to New York. Ben, you did a lot of work on Foles today. What'd you come up with?
Yeah, let's definitely, I think, start by addressing a topic on which you touched that warrants a quicker look a more in-depth look, I should say, because there's been some confusion about RPOs in the Philadelphia offense, what that means and what that's going to look like without Foles, without Carson and with Nick Foles. RPO stands for run pass option, of course, and Doug Peterson fielded some questions in his presser following the announcement of the Wentz injury about Carson Wentz running the football on RPOs. And that's not the intention of an RPO, and it's very important to understand that when you look at how this offense may deploy its personnel and how this offense may attack a defense with Foles under the helm. Run-pass option, the offensive line is run-blocking. The quarterback has the option to hand the football off. The running back is taking a running game sort of a path. He might be running a zone concept, very common for Philadelphia. But instead of looking at the ball at the mesh point to give it to the running back, the quarterback's eyes are up, and he's reading usually a secondary player, a safety or a linebacker is typically what's done. And depending on the action of that safety or that linebacker, the quarterback will always be able to make him wrong. So for example, that overhang defender, that safety or that linebacker, often has both run and pass responsibilities. In the event that he reads run, he's accountable for a gap in the offensive line. If he reads pass, he's accountable for a short zone in the defensive cover shell. So he has two responsibilities, run and pass. So run pass option, I'm watching that linebacker. If he comes down to play the run because he's seeing run action, I'm pulling the ball away from the running back, and I'm throwing it usually into the zone that was vacated by that linebacker. If the linebacker plays into that zone, he plays pass, then I'm handing the ball up to the running back, and we have an advantage. We have a number advantage in the rushing game because there's one gap that isn't accounted for. So the quarterback does not have to run the football on RPOs. There are certainly RPOs in Philadelphia's offense in which Carson rolls out or in which he scrambles. There are also read options, which is a two-run option sort of situation. Carson can either hand the football off to the running back or keep it himself and run with it with no pass available to him. That's the stuff that Philadelphia's offense will lose a little bit, those designed runs, those designed scrambles, perhaps.
Right.
Nick Foles is definitely mobile enough to roll out, though. He certainly is. His first play against Los Angeles was a 14-yard scramble, where the shotgun snap was bad. He picked the ball up off the turf, looked for his first read, saw nothing that he liked, saw the defense was closing, and just took the ball, tucked in, went up the middle for 14. He can move. Not Carson style. Carson's a exceptional athlete at the quarterback position. But those run-pass options will remain with Nick Foles. And one of the things that you saw Philadelphia do in the absence of Carson is, as you alluded to, it requires a very quick mental mind. It requires a snappy mind to go through an RPO to make that read, instantaneous. And especially if you haven't been a starter in the system for a long time, you may not be naturalized to them yet. But you can. RPOs are essentially a beautiful hybridization of play action. Play action was hoping to get the linebackers, again, that very same defender or the safeties, to react to run play, and then you pass over the top of them. You fool them into thinking the play is different. Now, if they played the pass correctly, there was no solution. Like I said, in RPO, you make him wrong no matter what he does. But what you saw very early from what Nick Foles did is Nick Foles ran a lot of play action, which looked very RPO-y. One of his first attempts was a little triple option sort of a concept, Mike, all right? So, you got an inside zone sort of a look where he looks like he might be giving it off the inside zone. Now, there's two wide receivers to the play side. The slot receiver, I believe it was Nelson Agholor, goes out for a little bubble screen look. Alshon Jeffrey runs that quick bang eight post that we've seen him run a lot, right? 7-5 steps down the field, bring it inside right in front of the corner, right? What happens is instead of reading the defense during the play, Foles made his decision before the snap. It was a pre-snap read in an RPO, so he could have handed it off or he could have passed it, but he saw man coverage with a single high safety, and the man on Alshon on the outside, about an 8-yard cushion. We're looking at cover 3 or maybe off man cover 1, very likely cover 3. Foles knows that the most likely route that's going to be open is Alshon on the bang eight. So even though it was technically a run pass option, it didn't require that mental processing in play. It was a pre-snap read. I think we can expect to see a lot of that from Foles to manufacture the same effects that Philadelphia's offense has so successfully over the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and from what you saw, and this is interesting to me, Foles under pressure, because the Eagles were the top pressured team this last weekend. They were pressured 20 times on 57 passing plays. It was the fifth highest percentage. Side note, the Eagles got the highest percentage of pressures in the league last week on Jared Goff, and he kind of looked scared at the end. But going back to the negative real quick, Isaac Seumalo was responsible for 7 pressures and 2 sacks. He shared a sack with Wiz, who also struggled a bit. Chance struggled. Kelce played well. Lane only gave up 4 pressures on 57 snaps. It's not so bad. From what I remember from Foles in his time in Philadelphia was that you could get him to abandon the pocket pretty early. And if you got him rolling to the right or rolling to the left, especially since he's a right-handed quarterback, his accuracy, his ability to deliver quickly diminished greatly when he was on the move, as opposed to Carson Wentz, who is that can throw from any platform with his feet anywhere and fire off a 50-yard rocket. I think that's a big difference as far as what we're going to see there. And the Rams got home on the stunts that we talked about, that we were worried about. I remember early in the game, Big V getting caught up on an ET stunt, and Robert Quinn hit him with an inside move and was able to get to the quarterback. So how did you see, when you looked at Foles, how did he look under pressure? I know it's a very limited snaps that he took, but what did you see from that?
Right, certainly. The thing about Foles under pressure that was very encouraging was he was very willing to just get the ball out, right? And he was under constant duress. Mike, let me tell you, firstly, a shout out to Doug Peterson. With his second string quarterback and third string left guard in the game against Aaron Donald, who is good. Aaron Donald is very good. Aaron Donald is the class of defensive tackles in the NFL, and he was lined up opposite of Isaac Seumalo, who, Mike, is not good. With his second-string quarterback and his third-string left guard, as well as his backup left tackle in the game, the Philadelphia Eagles scored what ended up being 13 unanswered points. Obviously, you got the defensive touchdown, but what really counts is they went and down the field and scored 2 field goals. They had a long drive to get a field goal range, and then they were able to get into, I guess, you know, good enough field goal range for Jake Elliott to hit a long one and then another shorter one on that second drive, right? They were manufactured enough offense, and all that credit goes to Doug Peterson, some of it to Foles. Foles released the ball against pressure. When he saw that he was going to get violated, he just got the ball out of his hands, right? Didn't put it in much danger. You know, he had a couple throws go to completely empty space, close enough to a wide receiver that it wasn't grounding. There seemed to be a little bit of miscommunication sometimes with some of the route concepts, which we'll talk about certainly, but he was willing to release the ball. Really only one throw got into kind of dangerous territory. He had one to Torrey Smith coming late to a check down, which, you know, the ball just didn't come out with a lot of velocity, which will be definitely something that Philadelphia misses. Foles can't jam it into spots the way that Wentz was able to, and Foles has a decent NFL arm. It's not bad. Right. It's not great. It's not bad. It's a little bit high variance, but you know, Carson could fit the ball into a window that was smaller than the ball. You know what I mean? Like, he could fit a 5-inch ball into a 2-inch space sort of situation, and so that's the concern there. And then obviously he kind of had that stupid throw to Big V where he was just trying to get rid of it and not take the sack. Yeah. But really, that's more of a heads up play than anything else. He saw color and he threw it out there. You know, I'm fine with that. Obviously, you know, if that ends up being grounding, if they call that, you know, they don't call him being in the grasp, then you have an even longer field goal for Elliott. But you know, that was a heady play. At the end of the day, Foles is a veteran. You know, he's a veteran in the league now. You can say that comfortably. He's seen a lot of things. He's seen, you know, playoff teams. He's been there. He's got a lot of starter experience, and that came up a lot. He did very well. LA came at him with a lot of blitzes. Wade Phillips wanted to knock him off the spot. Foles was pressured a lot, but he did very well reading the coverage shells. He did very well adjusting to last-second movements by the Rams defense and getting the ball out on time and safely. And even though not effective throwing off platform, obviously, you know, not much of a creator, you know, not scramble out of the pocket the way Wentz did, he didn't put the offense in jeopardy in that time against Los Angeles. That's what's important to me.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When I remember, again, going back to his time with the Eagles, he had a very good season with that 27 touchdowns, 2 interception ratio, which was amazing. But then you look at the next season, and Foles said it himself. He said, "I was holding on to the ball too long, trying to make these big plays happen, and that's where you saw his play fall off. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that he learned from that and will take that into this offense, make those snappy decisions, get rid of the ball. Because like you said, off platform, moving, not going to be as good. We'll just go back to last year real quick. He started one game. He was 1-0 as a starter, three games of action. He was 36 for 55, which is a 65.5 completion percentage, mm-hmm. 410 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Very efficient quarterback. So I'm not just trying to harken back to like the best days of Foles. He's been effective when he's played in recent memory too. Mm-hmm. And again, there's a very good reason that he is in the building, and it's because he can have that type of ceiling. I mean, he might not be the most dynamic playmaker with the best deep ball and the most dynamic athleticism,
right.
But when he's playing good football, he can be very effective. He's just not the flashiest guy. So sometimes he's awkward when he rolls, and it's kind of funny when he tries to get out of the pocket and all that stuff. And that's all great, but his ceiling is a very effective quarterback. And like I said, if these other units around him play up to their capabilities, there's a very good chance that this football team can win out. I mean, look at the rest of the schedule. Ben, is there anything on that schedule that really scares you if we're playing good football?
No, absolutely not. I think that when you're going up against the Giants, this defense should be able to hold that offense down pretty handily. You know, the Giants were a team that believed in themselves when they surged back and put up 24 against Philadelphia earlier in the season. They believed they still had a chance to turn things around. That is not the case. I do not anticipate that team to have much fire at all, even under an interim head coach coming in. Then you've got Oakland coming to town. Or excuse me, no, we're going to Oakland. And that's an interesting situation. Oakland may be very desperate for a win or two. That AFC West division, very curious. That's just nobody wants to win that division, man. It's kind of ugly. So we'll see. But
early prediction on the Oakland game. Nick Foles throws 7 touchdowns for the second time in his career.
I love it. Absolutely. He'll tie himself against Oakland, man. The slayer of the Raiders. Yeah, and then, you know, you got Dallas coming to town, and that game may mean something for first seed for Philadelphia. It may not. You know, that Dallas team could give Philadelphia problems you know, Ezekiel Elliott will be back for that game. Mm-hmm. They'll likely be a lot healthier than the first time they played Philadelphia. They might want to play a spoiler. And I think that moving forward, the Cowboys can best replicate the game plan Philadelphia will use, which as the current league leader in time of possession with over 33 minutes per game, Philadelphia absolutely should and must turn to a ball control style of offense. I think that's undeniable. You alluded to it, talking about Foles holding onto the football too long. The biggest issue I saw in the Rams tape, and then going further back, you know, it's a bit of a different ask because Foles had more time in the systems and he didn't know, you know, he knew he was going to come in as the starter, but the biggest issue you saw with him as a spot starter, you know, coming in, work in the week beforehand, is the timing with his receivers just his comfort when they're going to stop, how they're going to turn, where they're going to be. Multiple throws, just an exorbitant number of times, double clutching, patting the baby, a little shoulder fake, just not positive when in his drops he should plant his foot, turn, and throw. You know, third and 5, throw to Aguilar. If that's out on time, Aguilar has time to break the tackle. Ball's out a little bit late, it's a little bit high, and then Nickel Robey Coleman is right there for the tackle. It's fourth down. You know, Torrey Smith on a spot concept, that ball that was almost picked off, like I said,
right.
You know, he looked like he was reading. He wasn't sure going to the flat, going to the comeback, decided to go to the comeback. The ball was late. Corner was already closing. Corner makes a play. Alshon Jeffrey touchdown attempt, which, by the way, first play for Nick Foles inside of the 30, right? Eagles are down by 4. Doug Peterson called 4 verts. He called 999 out of 3-by-1 with Nick Foles. I lost my mind. He doesn't care. Doug Peterson is a savage. Both times when they got inside of the 30, he dialed up a shot play. He wanted to score that touchdown from the 30. The next drive, it was that double move to Alshon that was played really well. But on 999, on 4 verts, you know, Alshon won a nice inside position. Foles did a great job, held the safety with his eyes, single high. They rotated to cover 3. He went over to Alshon and put the ball as if he was expecting Alshon to be outside of the corner. Alshon was inside of the corner. It's a lack of rapport, which is why I honestly think, you know, we've been talking about Mac Hollins potentially having a bigger game. You know, as the weeks go on, we want to see him get more snaps.
Working with the backups.
He's the dude who's been working with the backups. So you may finally see the Mac attack coming here weeks 15, 16, 17. You know, to me, it's timing, it's confidence, where his receivers are going to be, you know, and so moving forward, I think the most consistent stick mover for Philadelphia will be the rushing attack. You know, we've seen they want to move the sticks with the passing game. We've seen that. That's how they like to do it. Carson Wentz, an incredible third down passer. We know this. I think that they're going to have to turn to a point where they consistently, you know, move the football with the running game. It becomes a run first, run centric offense. You got to be able to do that with Jay Ajayi. He's got to start to become a workhorse guy. You know, maybe you want to keep him healthy so that he's a long-term answer, but at this point in this season right now, you got to start giving him more touches, and you got to be able to hold the ball. You know, defense, some good stops. They've got to step up their game. You want to be winning time of possession. You want to be able to take a, you know, a 10-14 point lead into this, into the third quarter, and then just milk it for two straight quarters. That's got to be the blueprint moving forward.
Yeah, and I've been erring on the side of keeping Jay Ajayi fresh for the playoffs. We know about the wear and tear on the knees, so I get that part of it. I've been understanding that. You get to this part now where we really need to lean on the run game. This is where I expect to see the Ajayi show start to take over, and it needs to happen. And to your point, this offense isn't going to lose its nuts. Doug Peterson is going to be an aggressive coach, yeah, no matter who is in there, and he's going to expect results, which is awesome. This team is not going to be neutered by this terrible injury, which, God, I hate bringing it back up again because it's killing me. Mm-hmm. Okay, Ben, anything else for today? What else do you have for the gentle listeners?
Well, let's see. I mean, we talked about Peterson, talked about Samuel, talked a little bit about Mac, talked a little bit about Foles. Let's talk some happy Carson, because there's been so much bad Carson news. Going through the tape of the LA game, I didn't do much charting or anything like that, just kind of watching it through on the eye test. If Carson Wentz finishes that football game, we're talking about the best game of his career right now, Mike. We're talking mm-hmm. about the single best performance that he's had in, what is it now, 28, 29 starts as a Philadelphia Eagle. I mean,
and we talked about this real quickly on the Monday show, and then combined with what I said today about the pressure stats, the 35% of snaps we were pressured, mm-hmm. Carson Wentz only took one sack.
A player who can freeze in the pocket was notably decisive.
Wentz was fantastic. He was magical in the pocket. I agree. Definitely his best game.
No, absolutely. He, you know, a player that tends to be, you know, a little wishy-washy sticking to his first read, was decisive. You know, moved on, fired the ball into tight windows. A player who tends to be a little bit rock steady in the pocket, you know, feet sink into the mud, was moving, was climbing with the excellent work. The usual stuff we've seen, the creativity, the fearlessness, just it never saw a play that he didn't think he could make. You know, again, we talked about it. He sailed one or two balls. I think there's never going to be a game in Wentz's career where he doesn't sail one or two balls and he wants back, which isn't good. And, like, you know, that's not ideal. But if we're, you know, wiping away an interception where he put a good ball on Aguilar, defender made a better play, knocked the ball up into the right air, and then another secondary defender is right there for an excellent pick on one of the first throws of the game. We're talking about a 4-touchdown game. Again,
look at the way he rebounded from that. Mental toughness
we'll use this phrase. Yeah, we'll use this phrase. Zero, in my opinion, interceptable passes. Zero, you know, interception-worthy sort of plays where a defender should have, like, you know, it was a bad throw, defender should have made a play and didn't, protected the football, incredibly efficient in the red zone, broke the single-season record, you know, he came back against an NFC opponent, you know, they win the football game. If he's in the rest of the game, let's say they win the game, you know, they go there in control of number one seed. It's the best game of Carson Wentz's career. It's a defining play. It's an MVP sort of winning play after he gets outshined by Russell Wilson on Sunday Night Football in Seattle. We can still say, in my opinion, it was the best game of his career. He just didn't get to finish it, and it's obviously marred by the ACL. But Carson, man, it's going out with a bang, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, last throw was a touchdown pass. And, oh, here's another thing. The Chargers won, which puts them over 500. So add another W to the win column on the above 500 bullcrap schedule narrative that we've been having to deal with all season. This team is capable of beating good football teams. And I hate that schedule narrative anyway, so I'm never going to use that as proof of a team being a contender or not, because it's...
Guess who else went above 500? Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, that's right. They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so add another one. Anyway, Ben, what do we got going on for tomorrow?
Absolutely. We've got coming on Art Stapleton of Locked On Giants for the crossover. That will be the Wednesday show as per usual. Thursday and Friday, we're getting ready, previewing this game against the Giants. We'll obviously be talking a lot of playoff picture, keeping you updated when Carson Wentz eventually has his surgery, of course, and also the big ones. Steven Wisniewski, left guard, ankle day-to-day. He's the injury to watch moving forward. Zach Ertz should be back out of the concussion protocol. If they can't get Wiz back, that left guard, left tackle situation is real ugly.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.